This is the Disaster Recovery Hour. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
Morning. It is Saturday. I got some good news. I got LP and BP in the studio today. Free LP is now free. And we got BP, the man behind the mission. You're listening to it Saturday. This is the AM 970, the Apple, talking to York, and this is the Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. Like I said, they got the boys are in the studio today, and they got a big media tour going this week. So we were able to steal a couple of minutes from them. I was fortunate on October 30th to meet the guys that came into the studio. They were in our area fundraising for the organization they formed, MMRC. I know a lot of people out there have been following us on Twitter and the Disaster Recovery Hour Radio Twitter, and also with Nancy Murdoch up there, who's the communications director for MMRC. She's been putting out all that information regarding the guys, what they were doing. So we had the constant updates. Unfortunately, it took a turn for the worse when LP got unjustly incarcerated for turning a baby into a zombie. I know he's kind of crazy, but I don't think he was that crazy. And with that said, gentlemen, why don't you sound off so everyone knows that I'm not lying, that you guys are free and in country instead of in Haiti.
I appreciate that, Chris. This is Big Paul, and it's good to be back in the States now that all this is behind us.
What do you got there, LP?
I'm very happy to be out and back in the States. Fortunately, I was able to get into Miami and spend New Year's in the United States. It's awesome.
And now you've been in the New York City area, a city that never sleeps. Well, let's talk about how it led up to getting incarcerated. I mean, and the false charges, and let's go through the whole rigmarole. We got Paul, who was, and you know, last week and the week before, I had BP on the updates, you know, per segment, telling us what's happening inside with LP. Which a good thing is, because they were able to communicate on a daily basis. They giving the food to LP was inside, the humanitarian that he is. He was giving his food away to the other guys in the cell. It's just the kind of guy he is. BP and LP, you know, this all started with that aftershock.
Well, on February 23rd, about 1:30 in the morning, there was a 4.7. Epicenter was less than a mile from the hospital, Haitian Community Hospital that we were working in Route Frere, which is just down from Pétionville. And we evacuated the hospital, moved all the patients out into the road, which they were pretty much doing on their own anyway, and proceeded to set up a triage outside to receive new injuries, new people coming in. During that, a 15-month-old baby came in with his mother and father. Doctors proceeded to do what they could to save him. By the time I had went into the hospital and came out with a can of O2, the child had passed away. The doctor called him deceased. There on the spot, the father was given the hospital policy of having to remove his child from the hospital within 12 hours, and proceeded to tell us that he had no money, no property, no way to have services for him, and wish for the hospital to take care of the disposing of the remains.
BP, where are you at with this?
During all this, actually, I was there for the earthquake itself. I was treating a patient, helping set a dislocated shoulder with one of the docs. The baby that passed away was 3 feet behind me being treated by two nurses, and little Paul was just basically running around trying to get supplies for everybody. I left the country on February 28th for my scheduled flight out, and that's kind of when everything just started to go downhill from there.
Now, LP, you're still in country at that point?
I'm still there. The father had came by three times after this to observe the body. The third time he showed up, the body had already been incinerated by the administration had ordered the body incinerated. He proceeded to try to get a death certificate. They gave him the runaround on that. He eventually showed up with Haitian TV news person that was questioning me about the disappearance of the kid. I had believed that a voodoo priest taken the child's shirt, done some kind of ritual, said the baby was still alive in the hospital. The story changed about four, maybe five times. Went from kidnapping the child to selling for adoption, to harvesting the organs and selling them, to taking the ashes. And apparently this is among the voodoo priests, I believe, an infant's ashes are like a precious commodity. Hmm. And the other one was actually turning the child into a zombie.
I think our friend Anderson Cooper was mentioning that, right, with the disbelief.
I only
yeah. No, when I was talking to Anderson when we did the AC 360 segment, you know, that did come up, and basically it's, you know, we understand that there's the voodoo culture there,
and right? Respectfully, right?
And we respect it. You know, it's a lot of the guys that we work with. You know, they respect it. We've learned a lot through them. But I think what happened was this got twisted into something else, with this being the front, you know, where, you know, LP was, he wasn't even charged with kidnapping or anything like that. He was being held in questioning concerning kidnapping a dead baby and zombifying it.
Mm. So, but is LP is there that basically looking at it like an scapegoat, because the administrator and the doc who have authority, you here as a logistic individual, you know, you're not actually administering any kind of medical help.
I believe what had me as a target was the fact that we had medical teams coming in on a weekly cycle. By the time the father had looked into pursuing this as a charge, as a way to pressure me, extort money from me, I'm sure I was the only remaining American at the hospital from the period of time that the child was in to be seen. And had passed away, so I was the last one that he had an opportunity to do whatever he could.
This is Disaster Recovery. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. We're talking with LP and BP. It's Paul Sebring and Paul Wagner. So when you guys came back and we did the interview on the radio, and we were talking about some of the stuff at dinner, when you went back down, pick it up from when you finally got in country again and leading up to the arrest.
Immediately when this turned into a legal issue, I was notified at 9:15 in the morning when we were holding our logistics meeting at the hospital that I was to attend a hearing on a kidnapping charge at 11 o'clock that morning. Due to the fact that the administrator of the hospital also had the same warrant to show up for the hearing and seemed to show no concern for it, I proceeded to hire my own lawyer and have it taken care of that way. I left the country for a total of 9 days. When I contacted my lawyer, we kept in touch, you know, pretty much the whole time. Mm-hmm. He notified me that it had been taken care of. He presented it himself in front of the judge in my defense. The charges were dropped. I returned to the country a few days later. BP returned. We relocated to another hospital in downtown Port-au-Prince and proceeded to just take off doing what we were doing. I had no contact with the father, hadn't seen him again since leaving the country. And one day sitting, having lunch, December 12th, the father showed up downstairs of the balcony I was eating on at the restaurant and invited me down to speak to him. I told him he could come up and talk to me. We had a little bit of a conversation. He got a little irate. A few minutes later, he showed back up with 6 Haitian police with another warrant signed by a different judge on the same charges, and that's when
they went. So BP, you're at this at the restaurant too, right?
No, I wasn't at the restaurant. I was back at the house, and I got a call from Junior, and he basically informed us. He informed me what had happened, so I headed down to the prison to see the jail, see what was going on. Our car, we were waiting for a couple of the cops we know, and all of a sudden we get surrounded by Haitian police at shotguns, told us to get out of the car. And then I was proceeded to be arrested because I knew him.
Oh, and that's good. I like that.
Yeah, I was arrested because I knew him. Our guys were arrested, Junior and Wilson. We were released after 8 hours.
Now, we're going to go to a break and pick up the story. There's a lot more stuff. Plus, you know what? There's a lot of positives that came out of it. And we're going to talk about the future later on in the show. And so let's go to a break. Be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple.
When disaster comes into your life and attacks your property, you need action fast. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration will find the visible and hidden damage caused by a fire or flood. With quick response and correctly applied damage mitigation protocols, CPP can save you valuable time and money and get you back in the game of life. Anytime disaster strikes, quick focused action is what can save your property. CPP's professional staff is on call 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. Call 201-483-8953. That number again is 201-483-8953. Visit us on the web at www.cppems.com. Write this number down. 201-483-8953. CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. Servicing the New York Metro and Tri-State area. And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970, The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
We're back with the LP and BP. We're in New Jersey doing the taping, and they're getting information, and they're making something happen. There's a baby who, similar in age, who's sick in Haiti. They need a transportation. They need medical, not a carbon copy of what happened with the deceased baby. But, this is a true testament. The guys are up here doing the show, and they're still making things happen down there. So it's mind-boggling when people on the comments page talk about, has a guy go down and do the right thing, and then this whole organization gets a black eye and whatever. It's just insane. So we'll pick it up with that. So things are still moving along. Even thank God for the phones. You're still making things happen.
Yeah, I was contacted this morning by a fellow that works with another group that just recently got back down to Haiti yesterday. They do a lot of orphanage care, and one of the orphanages has a child about 2 years old with a sinus infection, high fever, and I believe is getting dehydrated. They needed to be seen, so we've directed them to some of the nurses that work with MMRC that are at a hospital downtown in Port-au-Prince to be seen and taken care of.
Yeah, I mean, Paul's been out. Tomorrow night will be a full 7 days that you're out. That LP got released, thank God, and BP scooped him up. It was a cool text that I got from him. Said I got him with me. It was just that was very cool. So BP to come on your side, and you were doing the Skypes and with some of the media out there, giving us the information, seeing what's happened. You were a cool collective customer, and I know you were boiling inside, as you said. I'm gonna be hot if they put you inside with him. How'd you deal with that?
I guess the biggest thing that I had to keep in mind was during the whole time that he was incarcerated, was having to keep a very calm and cool personality regardless of the information I was receiving. There was a lot of things that were happening behind the scenes that I had to keep all the information straight, and I knew that if I'd lost my cool, or if wrong information got sent out, or wrong decisions were made, it was going to
jeopardize him.
It jeopardized him, either his life or his, an early release.
Yeah. But LP, give us, if you don't mind, I know you want to relive it, but give us a day. Give us a 24-hour skid behind bars. Unjustifiably, we know that.
Well, after, I believe, 4 days of bouncing around in the local jails, they eventually transported me to the Haitian penitentiary, which I later found out was like in the top couple of worst prisons in the entire world. It was obvious when I got there.
It's good for your resume, huh?
All right. So I was started through the intake into the regular population, and I was able to notice that it was horrible conditions. There was no lights inside the cells. There was only security lights on the outside. After dark, that you couldn't see anything. They lock you down around 4:30, 5 o'clock. You had maybe an hour before that to use the bathroom, which was outside of the cell. Showers were outside of the cell. And in the morning, they'd let you out for about an hour to do the same. There was my cellmates were a couple of guys that were in there for murder. There was a guy that was in there for having two different forms of ID and a bottle of pepper spray that they referred to as a firearm. There was another kid that seemed to have some mental condition, was 16 years old and was in a cell for stealing bread.
So murderers down to stealing bread. That runs the gamut, huh?
And then there was me.
And then then there's the guy who saves people's lives and does the right thing and gets on choppers and goes into the middle of the mountains in the dark and with a BP. BP. Now you see him every day. I know you did, but for audience purposes, you saw him in the morning, give him food, or you saw him in the afternoon. How'd that went?
We had two times a day that we could go drop off food, letters, and things like that. And I didn't get to go every single day because with everything going on in the background. But when I did go and see him, it affected me a lot. I noticed he was living in conditions that I wouldn't even put an animal in. That we would have to try and, get a letter to talk to him, something like that. We would get either 30 seconds or, 2 minutes with him if we even got to talk to him. So communication was extremely difficult trying to maintain that.
So, but now when you're seeing him, it's a face-to-face right outside the cell?
Yeah, it's face-to-face right outside the cell. On one occasion, the warden let us have him come out of the cell and talk to him because he did have an infection in his elbow going into the pre-being arrested, and I wanted to take a look at that and make sure everything was okay. Granted, we did have to provide about enough water purification for about 50,000 gallons and 10 cases of hand sanitizer for the prison, but, it really didn't matter at that point.
Right. I mean, most people know, but if some people don't know and they're just tuning in with the story, with the Twitter and all the rest of this social media stuff, which is mind-boggling how fast this stuff travels. BP's got a background in being a medical technician. LP had his own business, a thriving construction business. But we'll get into that. But we're talking about. Visiting the prison, eyeballing your buddy here, and trying to keep him alive. So now, LP, now was it rhyme or reason, or did you have what had you occupy your time?
A lot of reading, writing. Just I had emails coming in. They were able to print up a lot of stuff from the free LP page, bring them into me daily. I occupied a lot of my time with that. Try to keep my mind out of where I was at as much as possible. It got tough at times. I had my ups and downs, but I was always reassured. Everybody was, telling me chin up, we're doing everything we can. And the members on the page just kept growing larger and larger, and people were keeping me up on that.
Yeah, that was cool.
It's pretty amazing.
If you just joined us, this is a Disaster Recovery Hour. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett, every Saturday here in AM 970 Apple, talking New York. It's about disasters and emergencies, and the biggest disaster of I've ever been associated with. Well, there was the downtown, but now with Big Paul and Little Paul, a very lucky individual to have met these guys, and they've opened my eyes to a lot of things. And it's kind of funny because my brother got involved after he heard the show, and he's also deals with some nonprofits, some heavy hitters. My brother was the one who brought Dr. Archie here for the Living Heart Foundation. That's still going very well, and it's the NGOs, the non-government organizations, that are really the ones kicking the can out there, making things happen in these countries that get devastated with these earthquakes, for example, in Haiti. Guys, so you have your daily, your BP, you're behind the scenes, you got the State Department, you got the lawyers, you got the, what's the prosecutor doing about it? Then the LP's in jail, trying to keep from, going bananas. Thank God for the social media, right? The pages are growing. That's cool. So let's back it up a little bit. Got a few minutes before the next break. Neither one of you guys knew each other before you even got down there, correct?
No, that's correct. Yeah, we met down in Haiti at the hospital where everything happened at.
You mean the initial where the baby?
Yeah, at Haitian it's Community right. Hospital. Okay. Yeah, we'd come down individually without affiliation to any other groups. And we met at Haitian Community Hospital, and we just we clicked. We got along really well. We knew there was a lot of work we could get done, so we started working together.
So you guys are online, or you just said, hey, listen, that guy over there can do this for you, and is that how the introductions went?
No, basically, I was working at the hospital doing logistics. He was over at, Little Paul was over at a orphanage, and there was a sick kid, and he brought the kid in to the hospital to have the medical teams look at him. And he's walking around. I introduced myself to him, asked him what he did, and he said he's a contractor. And I'm like, well, we have this really sick preemie. We need an incubator. Can you build one? And 2 hours later, he produces this incubator that he's made out of 2x4s, PVC pipe, a couple of screws, duct tape, and plastic sheeting. And it worked great. It bought the kid an extra 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
Did he or she survive?
No, the baby died. The baby wouldn't feed. But it did give us enough time that we could try getting the baby fed and everything like that. It just, you know, the baby was so premature. But, you know, the simple fact that, you know, I asked him to build an incubator, not knowing anything about it, talked to some of the nurses, and I could see from little Paul the motivation that he had to help people. And I could see from his attitude as well that, you know, he's like me, where we just do whatever it takes to get it done.
Right.
And we kind of clicked from there.
Cool. We're going to go to a break and pick up. I want to know how Paul came around getting his supplies for an incubator, along with many other stories. Let's go to a break. Be right back.
You're listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, on AM 970, The Apple.
And we're back to continue the conversation with the LP and BP. MMRC were in the article from Men's Journal. It was the Haitian Cowboys who were part of that. That was a good article. And then, you know what? They didn't cut anything out. That was very cool about them. You know, not too much editing in there.
No.
So let's, you know, we brought everybody up to date about, thank God you're out. Let's just put it that way. You're out. And but the events that led up to it, and again, the insane thing is, you know, here you got, you know, in a foreign country doing the right thing, and there's accusations. It's, you know, I was describing it to somebody the other day, and like, you know, they had that deer in the headlights kind of look, not even getting it. But let's back up with, hey, you know what? You guys were, you're BP, you're from Arizona, Paul, you're from up north, you know, two different directions, two opposites of the country, and you go down there. Why do you go down there? LP?
I returned home from work one afternoon, well, just January 12th, sitting down having dinner and was watching the news as they updated more and more, and decided that it was, you know, something right up my alley. I figured I could get in and help a lot. My intentions were to go down and start by helping with demolition and cleanup and possibly temporary or semi-permanent shelters.
Right.
And through the orphanage and meeting BP, who's, you know, sent me the other direction, and ended up being a great way to meet other aid workers, NGOs, and so on and so forth. And eventually BP formed MMRC, came back and took off. It was, you know, had a knack for what we were doing. It got it done and worked good together, and went from a 5-week commitment to a close to a year now.
Yeah. I mean, one day you're building houses, bathrooms and kitchens and whatever, and you see something on the TV that, I don't know, sparks something that's obviously in your soul your entire life, and then unfortunately a tragedy had brought that out. Not unfortunately, but fortunately, the tragedy. Now, just like you said, it's a year later. BP, how did your experience? How did that get you when you saw the earthquake on the 12th?
I was at my computer working, saw updates on CNN.com, and I just felt moved that I needed to help. Tried calling around. Nobody wanted me, just wanted my money, because all my, you know, I used to be an EMT. I wasn't certified in anything anymore, and felt that, you know, I'll go down there and start helping out where I can. Got on a plane, got down there, realized that, you know, medically I wasn't going to be able to do anything. They had doctors, surgeons, nurses, but logistically it was a nightmare. Hmm. And I did have some experience with that, so started taking over that and got the entire supply room, everything organized, thanks to the help of the Coast Guard doing shelves, North Carolina Baptist Men, and a lot of nurses helping out.
Because in the first interview that we did, you talked about going to the hospital and offering your services, and there was a room. I mean, they had supplies, but it was chucked in there like some kid's playroom with toys were all over the place, and it took you, what, you said 3 days to get that in order?
And it was basically, if you were to take 4 40-foot containers, empty it, pile it, stacked high into the ceiling. It was in rooms, it was in hallways, it was everywhere. And then the Coast Guard came in, they built a bunch of shelves. Rescue 24, NCBM red shirts, they came in, they built a lot of shelves. And once the shelving was in place, had a team of nurses from Spain plus myself, and within about 3 days, we got the whole thing up and running.
Mm. So LP, when I worked in Florida on the hurricanes, I got to know the guys who had supplies, and made sure they had my cell number because it was pretty sparse. I was down for the last hurricane. Now, when you got down there, obviously your expertise being, like you said, you're going to do demo or cleanup, try to help, but then you're starting to build things and logistics with moving supplies. Those supplies also include some form of building materials. Did you have like your buzz guys where you can go to get certain things from?
We had started putting together a good network, meeting people. You know, we made good connections. They seen that, you know, we were about getting things done, making it happen. We didn't care about paperwork. All we worried about was getting things to the right place, making sure the people that needed it were there, and, you know, building houses and having multiple jobs going on with, you know, a bunch of different employees kind of worked out real good. It made it possible for, you know, I was able to forecast and see what we needed and make sure that, you know, we had connections with people that had certain things. We knew where, you know, what doctors were going to be at what hospitals, and were able to transfer people supplies, whatever. We would barter and trade.
Right.
You know, we could, you know, go in and just smooth talk, you know, so and so here, and make sure that, you know, they got what they wanted. Just we could get what we needed for these people over here, and one thing led to another. Ended up being a great combination and a good network of people.
Yeah, so you found some people that saw that you were there for doing the right thing for both of you. But traveling from point A to point B, that was a logistic nightmare too?
Yeah, it's always pretty tough. We ended up renting a truck initially, but when that lease was up, we needed to buy a vehicle. We didn't have the money, and Patricia Arquette donated some money to us. We were able to buy a 1984 Toyota pickup truck, and it's affectionately called the Ghetto Sled. And I mean, it's a beat up piece of crap, but it works. And
I
then
love it.
When
life and death, they don't care.
Yeah, exactly. And then on their first trip down, the guys from Garden Fresh, Jack and Mike, they rode around in the Ghetto Sled. Then they politely asked us to go buy another vehicle that was more that was a little more reliable, and they gave us a nice donation. We were able to go buy a 2001 Montero.
Oh, well, okay.
Yeah, so cool. Yeah, it was nice. But, I mean, the biggest thing was that we started off doing medical supply distribution. We got to know everybody. Then basically it evolved into everybody knew we knew everybody, so they'd start telling us they had a patient that needed an orthopedic surgeon. We'd find them, transfer them. And from that it evolved into you guys are fast, mobile, and you're well-connected. Help us with cholera. And we were at the very end, just before everything happened on the 12th, we had a cholera. We were basically the emergency response cholera team for PAHO, and eventually we're going to start doing that with MSF.
Disaster Recovery. I'm your host, Chris Plunkett. My guests today are LP and BP. There was, what, half a dozen hospitals in the Port-au-Prince area? So you must have become in, like, free agents, you know, go from here to there, play for that. Was it like that? Or everyone was, it was,
Everybody just trusted us. It didn't matter which hospital it was or what it was. If we said that, you know, hospital A needed this, or we just knew that somebody, a bunch of people needed it, we knew somebody had a bunch of it, whatever it is, they just give it to us.
So, LP, learning the streets, you had to learn what, Creole? You had to at least get by with that? I mean, you have BP knowing the medical field of it, or then you trying to pick up some of that language off the street to get to go from point B to, you know, A to B, to C to D, and so on and so forth?
I could understand a lot more than I could speak, but we would keep, you know, our guys worked with us from the very first day we were in Haiti all the way up. They're still working for us now, still operating, you know, as we speak. I'm transferring a patient around and trying to keep our guys up to date on, you know, who's where and where this kid needs to go. But they're a great bunch. They helped me to, you know, learn a little bit, make sure that I'm understanding what's going on. And, you know, the driving thing was more my field. I was a lot better in there.
Two wheels or four wheels?
It depends.
Sometimes three, depending on what you're driving.
If I'm on the dirt bike or the truck, or I need to take a sharp turn and put the four wheels on too, it just, you know, whatever it took to get where we needed to go.
Yeah. Well, that also included helicopter rides. I know we were talking about it the other night. You guys were involved going up to a remote area with cholera, and it was bad news before you even got up there. Why don't you make our listeners give which is one of a thousand stories I know you have, but make them feel that they've, that, you know, they understand the weight of the situation down there and you know, what you guys were doing for complete strangers.
Pretty much what happened was we had ground intel that was verified that in the city of Bourne, they had major cholera outbreak through PAHO, the Pan American Health Organization. They gave us 2,000 kilos of medical supplies. We had a four-man team. Took a helicopter and landed at the riverbed and dropped in with the supplies. I was there for that. LP was on standby. He was going to come up on the next helicopter to set everything up. But when we got there, we realized that a couple of things were in place that it was just we needed to educate the medical staff on how to do things better. It was a lot more manageable than we thought. And LP was actually needed more in Port-au-Prince because the elections were in process. And we had to get medical teams around, and like he was just saying, he's kind of our wheelman, where just putting his life on the line daily to move medical teams around through riots, burning tires. When they say, you know, the streets or the city's on fire, it was literally on fire. So he was actually down there putting his life on the line to get doctors and nurses where they needed to go, while I was up north with medical team, putting ourselves at risk of getting cholera, making sure that everything was taken care of.
And then LP's down in the city that's burning. Now, cholera, we're going to go to a break in a couple of seconds, and we'll just touch on that. Just give me a quick over. It's a kind of simple thing, isn't it?
Basically, it's a bacteria that goes in, attaches to the colon, changes the polarity of your colon, where your colon normally says, okay, reintroduce water into digested matter, turn it into poop, out it goes. Basically, what cholera does says purge all water. You lose a liter to a liter in half an hour, and you die from dehydration.
Oh, so it miscommunicates it or everything and nothing goes out.
Yeah, so all you've got to do is flush out the cholera, get through. It has a very short lifespan, and if you can catch it in time, keep them hydrated, you know, everything like that, everything will be okay.
And obviously your body makeup will dictate in how sick you'll get and how quickly you'll get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had cholera. I got it from one of the times we were up there. It's horrible. But it's just one of those things that, you know, if you can stay hydrated and you can get ahead of it, your body will fight it. Mm-hmm. You just got to need the medical supervision.
But when it eventually it grabs you, and, well, you know what, we're gonna sum up that story in a second. Then we're going to talk about the future because it's very bright, and the guys are, I always say, get jacked up for these kinds of things. Disaster Recovery Hour, we're going to go to a break. Be right back.
And now back to the Disaster Recovery Hour on AM 970 The Apple. Here's your host, Chris Plunkett.
And we're back during the break. You know, BP said before we went to break, he had it. And LP was just talking about him having the cholera on his last day of seeing the judge. And it was a very colorful story. I'll just leave it at that. So, guys, with nothing's in the past, it's we were talking about there. I mean, you're only removed 1 month, 1 week from Haiti. So everything is still fresh. Looking forward, I'm excited for you. I hope I'm going to be a part of it because I like to get people to realize that the work you guys do and the need, and talking to some of those NGOs, talking about logistics, and I'm hoping the MMRC just explodes the entire planet. So, LP, what are we looking at for the future?
Well, as far as I go, I have a few more things going on in Haiti that I would like to see all the way through. Currently, you know, we have our Haitian guys, and Junior and Ralph and Forrest and Ellie down there continuing our work and, you know, making sure the people that we have coming down there and doing different projects, working in the hospitals and clinics, or, you know, taking care of their security, their transport or where they need to go, so on and so forth. I have the orphanages that I work with are now putting together necklaces, bracelets, and arts and crafts that are sent back here to the States, and through another NGO, Lady Corey Gould, she sells them through a jewelry store in her apartment building and brings in quite a bit of money. It helps to fund their, you know, pay for their staff, pay for their food, pay for their supplies, if they need medicines, stuff like that. And, you know, it takes care of that. It's a good source of income for them. It teaches them, you know, a way that they could sustain themselves, you know, even with the bad economy in Haiti. You know, they have they know they have another way of producing some income and keeping their projects or orphanages alive and thriving.
BP, your turn, bro.
Well, he's
and for you personally, and then you know, because I know you guys are going to be tied to the hip, and then you know, what's the future with MRC?
For me personally, I'm going to be helping out, supporting LP and getting everything that we need. We do have a lot of medical supplies that people have donated here in the States to go down, making sure I need to make sure that they get down there smoothly, make sure they get received by who needs them and they're used. On the global aspect, we want to, you know, maintain Haiti. We have a presence there through our guys, keep them going. But we also want to start looking around at other countries that we can help out in. And also, you know, gear up to whether if there is another disaster that we can respond to it immediately, because we are able to react and respond very well and extremely efficient what we do in a disaster area. But we don't want to just go somewhere and be there for like a disaster tourist for a couple of weeks and leave.
Right.
We want to go wherever we go and work at. We want to see what their needs are, help them out, and then find out what the long-term goal is that'll make the place better. And start to establish that, and that'll be our footprint. With Haiti, it was the EMS system that
you talked about.
We wanted to do that. You know, granted, there's been changes and everything like that, but our goal is never to just be a tourist in a disaster zone, but more go in, help stop the bleeding, get everything fixed, and then figure out what is going to best help the country and its people, and implement that as our footprint.
Yeah, one of the what's one of the great things that's happened since I met you is we've met other people. Who heard the show, who are NGOs or some people in Canada. They've put on they made a documentary. I don't know if it's actually completed yet, but what's happening from this tragedy. For a personal standpoint, for me, as I've met some other great people, obviously including yourselves. Have you met any other NGOs who are looking to team up with you and try to make these things happen on a global standpoint?
We've talked to some other groups about what our plans are. We find that a lot of times Lil Paul and I work really well together as the core, and then we can associate and we work well with other groups. But in regards to teaming up and partnering, I personally don't see it happening, because anyone I've met, I mean, it's very hard for them to keep up with us.
Yeah.
We do have a great team of volunteers that come in and work with us, the nurses, the logistics, the doctors. They're all top-notch, and they really do care about it. I mean, you know, look at what happened with, you know, LP's incarceration. I mean, you know, we have, you know, Michaela and Laura and Danny over on the West Coast. We had Nancy up north, Corey here. You know, basically everybody pulled together, and these are the caliber of people we work with. But, you know, they come in and they help us out, and, you know, they're very close to our hearts, and we do anything for them as they do for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, you know, we've got an amazing core of people.
At that's a team. I think you get a W, you get a win, and sometimes you get losses, but you get a W when you have a team and people who have the same sense of urgency. Now we're looking at the future, but you know, we got it. There's so many things that are happening down there, and so many of the stories that are in my head from the time not taping and taping and Skyping and all the rest of that. We jumped into so many things, but we really didn't talk about getting out of Haiti. It, you know, was it just like the way you make things happen? You know, it's like, okay, we got we have an issue in the mountains. We're gonna go deal with that. Boom, you make it happen. Get out of country. Was it the same thing? And is it in the rearview mirror, or that's the way you're gonna make it happen everywhere else in the world?
Basically, the easiest way to look at it is when LP was released from the prison. That last hour, it was extremely intense. It was very fast-paced. We got him in the vehicle, and we had a security detail with us. And we just hauled ass out of there and got back to the compound, locked it down. The next day, we got everything done, got out of the country. And we still want to take, you know, that intensity of those last few hours and apply them to what's going to be happening in the future. You know, we're not leaving Haiti behind us. We can't have a physical presence there for now. We're going to find out how to get around that so that we can have a physical presence there again when needed. But we're going to keep everything logistically going there, having our guys going. But then we're going to take the same intensity that we've always had in Haiti and everything else we've been doing and apply that to other countries and other people that need help. There's always going to be impoverished people. There's always going to be less fortunate people than us. And there are always going to be people that need services that we can provide. And that's basically what, you know, Lil Paul and I have decided to do with the rest of our lives, is to make sure that we can take our motivation or drive in what makes us us and apply it to helping other people.
You know, I said it a while ago, you know, when they always say, you know, get out and vote, you know, one vote can make a difference. Here's two guys made a difference in an entire country. And that formula is, it's almost like with our broken, with the broken financial issues we have going on in this country, everyone said, stop, we got to stop spending. And instead of, you know, the gravy train and people thinking it's all great, no one was doing about it, but they were talking about it. You go down there, you got some great NGOs down there, but you said, you know what, I think we better form our own situation, our own corporation, if you will, and because we know we can make it happen. So that's what the future looks like for you guys, and I think any other NGO should latch on to you because you have a proven track record. I mean, look at 1 year. It's going to be a year next Wednesday, right? That's going to be, yeah, the 12th will be a year since the earthquake happened. And you probably are in for, you know, 50, 60, 70, 80,000 people that you've actually touched and saved their lives one way or another. LP, you being incarcerated, can't even begin to ask you the right questions. I don't. Hopefully that never happens again. With that said, guys, again, I'm a very grateful individual for meeting you, and really from the bottom of my heart, you opened my eyes to a lot of things, and doing the right thing. Thanks for coming in. Enjoy the rest of your week. I know you got some more interviews and some TV, and hopefully it gets lots of traction. And MRC is going to be, when I watch PBS, I'm going to see this hour was, donated by MMRC and, you know, doing the public radio thing. So LP, BP, last sign-offs, anything for them out there? Maybe go to the website. You still have Nancy running the show, which is going to be she'll be the main person for communication and with donations and information. And this show is always going to be with you, and we'll be trailing you. But you're not going to get away from me.
No, you're family, and you're stuck with us. Like, we're stuck with you, and we are very grateful for everything you've done for us, Chris. And you know, we'd like it if everyone can go to the website, which is mmrcglobal.org. Take a look at what we're doing, and you know, realize we aren't sponsored by any governments or anything like that, and we basically are dependent upon people's donations to keep us going and to keep doing good in the world. There's just so many people that, you know, I personally want to thank for everything that's happened, trying to, you know, the support system that we had with all everything we've been over the last year, from supply management to patients to cholera to the everything just happened with little Paul. But you know, I just want to say, you know, before the 1 year anniversary of the earthquake, I just want to say thanks to everyone, including you, Chris.
No, my pleasure. LP, thank you very much. You've been listening to Disaster Recovery Hour. You can say goodbye if you want, LP. loved.
I'd like to thank you, Chris, for, you know, keeping us out there and making sure people know about us. And thank Nancy, Jack, and the Garden Fresh people for all the help they put into keeping us alive and keeping me alive, getting me out of the penitentiary there. You know, Michaela over in Seattle, Corey that helps with the orphanages, Laura with the clothing line, Rodney for cooking all the food for me, and, you know, everybody else that was a part of the Free LP Nation on Facebook there. And
That was cool.
You know, everybody in the back channels that pulled the strings that they did that I don't even know who they are. You know, just, you know, huge thank you, and make sure that, you know, people out there know that they can go down there. This is not an everyday occurrence, and there's still a huge need for help.
Yeah, these are two true Americans. You can just drop them into any century that's happened in our country, and they could make the Homestead Act. They could be down in the Revolution. I'm guaranteed they'd make something happen. Guys, thanks a lot. Again, Disaster Recovery Hour. Chris Plunkett, the other disasters are war. Let's bring home our troops, and God bless our country. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Disaster Recovery Hour with your host, Chris Plunkett, from CPP Emergency Services and Restoration. You can reach Chris by calling 201-483-8953. And don't forget to tune in every Saturday morning at 7 for the Disaster Recovery Hour, right here on AM 970, The Apple.